Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinati Guma, tackling your stock-related questions this evening. Jean-Pierre Verstappe from Protea Capital Management and Nilesh Hanshji from Old Mutual Investments. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks, gentlemen, for your time. So we've had quite a mixed picture in markets this week so far. Yesterday we had sour sentiment, and then today we see a recovery in the markets, really seeming that markets are unsure. JP, starting with you, do you think that the markets are just in waiting?
Well, I can't remember when last the markets were sure, Zanati. Yes, we are waiting. We're always waiting for the next data point. We're always waiting for the next company results announcement. There were a few of those today. And in this volatile macroeconomic environment, what we have seen is that some companies are doing well. They're outperforming expectations. Some companies are coming in below expectations. And that means there's even more volatility because people weren't positioned correctly for the results that were actually announced or the macroeconomic data when it does come out. People might have been positioned differently. So I know it feels like things are uncertain, but I would say that things are always uncertain, and right now is no exception.
Yeah, talking about uncertainty, I really do get the feeling that when you look at investors, like the one foot is inside and the other foot is outside the door. Nilesh, where are your feet facing right now?
Good evening to you and your listeners. Well, we kind of a bit of both, to be honest. We're one step outside and waiting for the rain. And the volatility for us provides us with opportunities. I think as JP said, you know, we're just watching the markets. We're looking for good entry points. And, you know, as I said, markets are just looking for direction. But, you know, hardened investors just dig down, dig deep and wait for good opportunities to come our way.
Yeah. What's the dollar doing right now, JP? Because a lot of people always say that when you're struggling to figure out what direction the markets are going in, just look at the dollar.
Correct. Yes. So the dollar has been a big driver for equity markets this year. So at the moment, we're at 17.29. We're not big. It's not a big change on the day. But if we go back to a month ago, we were trading at roughly 18.40. So the rand has strengthened quite a bit against the dollar and a lot of currencies have strengthened in the last month against the dollar. If you go back further, let's say year to date, up until a month ago, the dollar has been on a tear. It's been so strong. Now, that might have been good for companies who make their money in dollars, who operate within the US. But for any company who's got global operations, these very big currency movements are really difficult. It's difficult to manage your costs, to make sure that your gross profit margins or net profit margins are stable. And that has created havoc for a lot of companies, and it's created havoc for a lot of emerging markets because as their currencies have weakened against the dollar, all their imports have been more expensive, especially oil. The oil price has been high as well. So for more than almost any other year recently that I can remember, the dollar and currencies has been a very big driver of equity markets specifically in this year.
Talking about havoc, we saw what the markets did to Astral when they came out with their trading update a few weeks ago, warning about major price increases to the consumer, talking about extraordinary input costs that they've had to deal with. So we did have yesterday actually the results coming out. I think that share was up about 1% on the day, but of course it does not make up for that 18% crash that we saw a few weeks ago. There is a question here on Astral Foods. What is the feeling about Astral Foods as a medium-term buy at the current price? It does not seem to have big ups and downs in the share price, well, except for a few weeks ago, and the dividends twice a year look good. Is it is a buy now sensible? Nilesh, what's your view on Astral Foods?
I think Astral Foods is a well-managed company, but there's a lot of things that are out of management's control. The big driver, or at least what drove the share price higher before the collapse, was, as you said, passing through price increases on poultry, which is their chicken business. But the key driver there is largely related to the maize price, which as we've seen, input costs just continue to rise for that business, and they have to absorb that. Coupled with that, they're still seeing imports coming from Brazil and Europe, which is kind of a regulation issue around dumping from these other countries into South Africa. So, you know, they're going to be in a tough spot for a little while. I said, one, trying to absorb these higher costs. Two, just being challenged with cheaper imports coming into the country. And it's maybe one where, you know, we don't mind just sitting on the sidelines for a little bit.
Yeah. JP, would you be sitting on the sidelines, or do you think that this is a great opportunity and that maybe this pressure is not going to last for very long? I mean, the viewer's asking, I mean, at the current price, do you think it's cheap enough for someone who actually believes that it will recover at some point to dig into that opportunity right now?
I think it's a reasonable opportunity at the moment. A lot will depend on the price increases that the company is going to try to put through now in the run-up to Christmas. There'll be a lot of chickens consumed around a lot of tables in South Africa around the festive season. And what has happened in the past is when you do see a steep increase in the maize input price, as has happened now again, Astral has been able to pass on those price increases to the consumer. So if they can do that, yes, and I do think the current share price is attractive. The poultry profits are very volatile in this company. And they really manage everything under their control very well. And even some things that should be out of their control, like electricity supply from government, fresh water supply from government, which hasn't been forthcoming, they've even taken control of that by building their own power plant, for instance, in Standerton. So a really good management team, but they're in a very difficult boat. And the boat is in very stormy waters. But if they can get the increases through, I think it's reasonably priced at the current stock market price.
All right. So that's an existing player already as a listed JSE company. But then you also have RCL, which has been mulling a separate listing of their Rainbow unit. And I'm just trying to think. You talk about, the chicken business basically being in a volatile boat. Is it a good idea to take that out and list it separately when it has all these challenges? Neelash?
Well,
JP. Okay, you can go, JP.
Sorry, I'll be quick and then I'll let Neelash add to that. I'll just say that obviously RCL management doesn't want a volatile business like Rainbow Chicken within their business structure, so they would rather give it to shareholders and we can own it separately, and they don't need to take responsibility for it.
Okay, Neelash, your take on that? I mean, just bringing out that kind of company to the market while we're seeing all these headwinds, really pressurizing Astral Foods.
I think I agree with JP here. It's putting it out there into market. One, just unlocking the value within RCL, but two, creating that accountability for the existing management within Rainbow Chickens, and three, giving shareholders like us, you know, or investors the opportunity to make that decision around investing or not.
Yeah. All right. There's a question on Coronation here. There's a consensus from analysts that the JSE asset managers have performed better than expected. Do you just hang on to your shares? Of course, we've seen those shares really being beaten down, of course, as expected, with the volatility that we've seen in the markets, that filtering through to their results. So, I mean, do you just hang on to the shares right now and just wait for things to get better, JP?
I think for the medium term, you can. A lot, again, depends on the key variable. In the case of Coronation, there are two key variables. The one is the assets under management, and they've seen pressure there. They've seen outflows, and we know as a country, we aren't net savers anymore. We are a dis-saving country, unfortunately. And the other key variable is performance. And a year ago, they had some performance fees, and there was a lack of performance fees in this period, which also impacted the profits negatively. So keep your eye on those two things. What is going to happen to the assets under management? They give an update quarterly on the JSE and track their funds and see what their performance looks like. And if the performance turns more positive, then I think you can sleep well at night while holding your shares. But if those two key variables turn negative, you should consider selling.
I remember when the mini budget in the UK came out and there were concerns about companies even the asset managers that are exposed to that market. And there was a little bit of caution, so of course, Quilter and 91. But I'm thinking in terms of Coronation that's more domestically focused. And as JP said, they've mentioned that the savings pool in South Africa has decreased. There isn't really any meaningful growth in the economy. So how do you look at a domestically focused asset manager like Coronation compared to the ones now that are exposed to, for example, the UK? Nilash?
So I agree. So I think one is you have to look at it from the business perspective in the sense of where is the market situation. As I said, they're largely SA focused and to the products that they offer. So while Coronation is a local asset manager, they do have an international offering within their business, which is their global market GEMS fund. So I think it's one, it's, you know, ability to have the product and to the distribution and the client diversity within their business. I think, but the reality is a lot of asset managers are focused or are reliant on markets, which again supports their AUM. I think the one big difference is South Africa, as you mentioned, is the savings pool, you know, is slowing. So from a structural perspective, we are concerned that you just at a stage where Coronation is maybe perhaps just too big for the market, as I said, experiencing outflows and needs the performance to turn. In that situation, it's not a bad place to hold on if you can still hold on for one, the performance to turn, or two, just cashing on the dividends. You know, they pay out more, almost 100% of their dividends, well, yesterday. And so we can just, you know, bank in on those dividends and get the cash.
Yeah. All right. Still sticking to the financial services sector, we have Old Mutual saying that they are applying for a banking license. JP, how much attention are you paying to that?
Yeah, I saw that that little note in the update. It's going to be interesting. Their partner to date has been Bidvest Bank, so there needs to be a renegotiation of that relationship. If Old Mutual don't need Bidvest Bank anymore, and they'll probably try to transition those clients onto their own banking license. And they've got a very big client base that they sell policies to, life, funeral, some short-term insurance policies to. And I'm sure, almost like what we've seen with Discovery, is they'll offer a bank account and then they'll probably offer some incentives to say that if you are a client with multiple products, and you add the bank account as well, you'll probably get some specials included. So it's going to be interesting. You know, for a long while, we had less and less banks in this country through some issues like VBS on the one hand, but also some mergers that happened. So from a country point of view, it's good to see that potentially we'll actually have a new entrant, a new participant, a new licensee in the banking industry to show that we aren't just shrinking as a banking industry.
Nilash, I'm not sure if you can actually talk about that.
no, I can't, don't worry.
Oh, okay. But I just want to quickly go to back to JP. I'll come back to you about life insurers in a moment. But JP, I mean, just, you know, Old Mutual going in now, trying to get into the banking sector. Should the existing banks start shaking in their boots, or do you maybe think that this will play out as maybe more of a value add for Old Mutual customers?
We'll need to wait and see. Remember that for a long time they owned a stake in Nedbank, so they had a banking capability through their firstly subsidiary and later associate, which didn't quite work. So I think the jury's out to see how they execute on this new strategy.
Nilash, just from you, because there's the sense that the life insurers are unloved, and also, some people are just wondering where the growth will come from. And I guess it makes sense now for Old Mutual to be trying to look for more revenue streams. And I just want to know from you, is this a kind of maybe corporate action that we're going to start to see now as these life insurers have come out of the COVID pandemic? Nilash?
Sure, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sure. I mean, I think that's it, right? Life insurance is a over-penetrated market in South Africa. They are big incumbent players, and that's led to more competition coming in. So we've seen more competition insurance coming from the likes of Capitec, the likes of FirstRand, and we know Discovery has been probably one of the biggest competitors, you know, if you look at the last 20 years, just how they've taken market share from the big players. And I think, you know, with the banks also trying to become insurers, so we see, you know, the other side, insurers, you know, launching banking capabilities. And I think it makes sense from a strategic point of view. I think one of the key things, especially when it comes to customers, is how do financial companies engage with customers and with the bank product? It's one of these things where customers, you're in contact with your bank way much more often, you know, almost on a daily basis as you check balances, make payments, just interacting with your normal bank account versus how you would interact with your insurance product, maybe via a broker or direct. So it's one of these things, one, that makes sense from a strategic perspective to try and, one, defend your current market share, and two, just interact or gain just more that customer centricity, which just insurers probably just need a bit more of.
Yeah, all right. Well, some more questions on the financial services sector. Can the panel give their view on Nedbank growth for next year and dividend expectations? JP?
Well, I think all the banks are still coming out of COVID. So, you know, if you talk about earnings growth, they should all show strong numbers to some extent because of a base effect, Nedbank being no exception. And they're all very well capitalized. We've seen, for instance, in FirstRand's results, there was a nice distribution to shareholders. So there would be no reason to think anything else from Nedbank.
Yeah. And yeah, so there's really also the sense that just financial services in general, life insurers and also the banks are trading at significant discounts. Neelash, what would you say the cheapness of the banks is a function of?
Well, I think we've seen the rand just being particularly weak. over the last week, I think, even if you exclude the last 2 weeks since the rand has come back.
Yeah.
One is, you know, multiples have been impacted by just, you know, the South African environment. I think, you know, bond yields were going up with the stronger dollar. The rand weakened significantly, and we've just seen this huge uptick in load shedding over the last few weeks, which have kept, you know, prices just a bit more dampened in the recent, period. But as JP said, I mean, the fundamentals for the banks remain strong. You know, the earnings are still there. They still expect strong capital positions, which provides, you know, either dividends or share buybacks, which we're seeing from the likes of Investec. I think insurers, on the other hand, you know, are trading at significant discounts to their ratio. They really look unloved. And there they need some market performance or two, just the reality that COVID is over, they can release some of the capital and just pay back the dividends, you know, or do something with their capital. I think that was your question earlier around Old Mutual. Mutual is just being coy with capital, and now we know why. We want to invest in a big, you know, in a new bank.
Yeah.
At least something exciting.
All right. So looking forward to those developments over there. There's a question here on Barloworld. What do you think about Barloworld as a buy now at this price? JP, do you think that people should be pouncing, especially because we've seen the kind of corporate action that they've been taking to kind of stick to their core functions?
I'm still doing my calcs regarding Zeda, the Avis and Budget business that they'll unbundle before Christmas. So that's a nice Christmas present that that we'll get. And depending on your view of the fair value of that business, you would then work out what is the implied valuation on the rest of the Barloworld business. At the moment, it does seem like on a sum of the parts basis, Barloworld is cheap. The big issue for me is they still have substantial exposure to Russia. And they've said they're taking a neutral approach, but I wonder if taking a neutral approach is not taking a pro-Russian approach in effect, because the whole Western world effectively is putting on sanctions against Russia. And I think clearly from most media outlets, you can see who the aggressor is in the conflict in the Ukraine. So by taking a neutral approach, they do that run the risk that some Western countries might say to them, listen, you're not playing ball, and they might get caught up in some future sanctions. If this conflict can end soon, you could see a very sharp upward move in the Barloworld share price, because that will take away this major risk that's currently, I think, dampening the share price of Barloworld.
Yeah, indeed. We did see those kinds of movements as well, for example, with Mondi. And then when they said that they're walking away, we did see a recovery in that share price. Neelash, yeah, Barloworld, the core business. And are you as worried as JP about that Russian operation?
I think that's exactly it. You know, it's how they view the Russian business in the context of just, you know, an increasing, conflict or slash sanctions environment, especially around Russia. I think two is, look, you have to give Barloworld management credit. I think 2 years ago when they embarked on trying to buy the Ingrain business, people worried about capital allocation. People thought the acquisitions were happening at the wrong time. And, you know, they've turned the ship around, you know, on the core business. So, you know, on one side, you balance, you know, great management team who have delivered on their strategy, you know, in a lot of tough criticism at that point in time around capital allocation. But the other side, it's they do have an exposure to Russia, which is becoming an increasingly tough or challenging environment to operate in, while you still have this ongoing pressure around Russian exposure and sanctions. And what does it mean to operate in the territory in the future?
Yeah. Talking about tough environments, Zimbabwe is one with that hyperinflation that does distort the numbers of some of the counters on the JSE. Yesterday we had PPC and today we have Omnia. But we're basically being told to just brush it off and concentrate on the underlying performance that excludes that. JP, do you think that is the right kind of sentiment, or are you maybe more nervous about it?
Yeah, hyperinflationary adjustments is one of the trickier ones when it comes to financial statements and how to show what really is happening on a like-for-like basis. So Omnia has told us that, I think it was up over 30% if you adjust for that for Zimbabwe. But still, Zimbabwe is a major profit contributor. Yeah. And we've seen a number of companies in the past that operate in hyperinflationary environments that show certain accounting profits, even when adjusting for hyperinflation. But where the rubber hits the road is when they try to translate that into cash, when they try to extract cash from the hyperinflationary economy. And then quite often they get a fraction of the profit they thought they had on an accounting basis. Yeah. So I am a little bit more nervous about Omnia because it's not easy to extract cash out of Zimbabwe. And then we also have this overhang of the SARS issue, where the revenue service is potentially looking for a big number from them for past transactions. So those are two issues that probably need to be cleared out before I think the market in general will get very comfortable with Omnia.
Yeah. Just still on Omnia, I spoke to the CEO earlier on, and he actually said that Zimbabwe is a core market for them on the fertilizer and mining side. But then they also said that in terms of revenue, it contributes less than 5%. So with all these troubles that it seems to be coming up with, does it not then make sense for them to kind of walk away from it? Because it doesn't seem really as significant as all their other operations. Neelash?
So I think that's a great question for the companies themselves and the boards, because it is based on the regions that they operate in. And I think the key, one of the real issues is around the cash, because you do have a situation where the cash is stuck in the country. Even if you have to try and get a sale through, just as we see in Russia, while you can announce a sale, sometimes just getting the cash out of the country just becomes so much more difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic kind of African roller coaster ride. When the currencies move, inflation rises, your cash is trapped, and we're just kind of stuck in the mud. So it's one of these things you just have to ride through, let the companies make the right decisions around capital, and see where they're invested in for the long term.
Yeah. So actually, before the show off air, JP and I were talking about how I saw him on Steinheist. And there's actually a question here. Can you comment on Steinhoff International? Of course, if you have watched the show, you'd know that JP basically shot the stock. So just coming to you, before even Neelash, so has your stance changed on Steinhoff after the whole debacle with their whole kind of recovery plan and with the legal settlements, JP?
Look, it is a different company now than what it was before the big fall. I think the big thing that the management team is grappling with is to extend the debt at the center. Mm. It's a big number, I think more than 11 billion euros. At the moment, it's still quite long tenure. So if they can extend it further, it means that Steinhoff is effectively an option on two very good businesses, Pepco and Pepco, and a smaller business in mattress firm and some, greenlit bands in Australia. So if they can extend the debt, it becomes an option. And if those two underlying businesses increase in value at a higher rate than the cost of the debt, there could be some good value in Steinhoff over the long term.
All right. So not too negative. Neelash, your quick take on Steinhoff?
No, I'm happy to wait on the sidelines. These businesses, when you have these situations, it takes a long time. Dealing with debt takes time.
Yeah.
Option values, markets turn. A lot of things happen in that same time. I'd rather use my money and allocate it elsewhere.
Somewhere else. Okay, so let's get to your stock picks where you'd rather allocate your money. Neelash, sticking with you, what's your stock pick for today?
So I'm sticking with actually FirstRand, just as we're talking about banks. As I said, they still look reasonably attractive, strong capital. Momentum is still there. So earnings are coming through. FirstRand itself has a lot of capital. You know, you could see a good, a strong market update coming out. We've seen the other banks report and it's lagged. It should be a nice recovery play.
All right. And on your side, JP?
In the last few months, I've taken a particular interest in the semiconductor industry. I'm in good company. I saw Warren Buffett bought shares in Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, but I'm picking a stock which is a semiconductor capital equipment business. It's a U.S. business called CLA Corporation, and it makes the machines which checks the wafers that the silicon chips are cut out of to make sure that the wafers are pure, and that means that they don't waste money by using wafers that have got some issues. The machines that they sell are very, very expensive, and there's so much money going into building new semiconductor manufacturing plants in the U.S. in particular, but also in Europe, that a lot of their machines will probably be bought. That's really good for them, so I think their prospects look bright.
All right, well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and for your analysis today. Jean-Pierre Ferstad is from Protea Capital Management and Nilesh Hansji from Old Mutual Investments. A quick reminder, tomorrow at 10 a.m. we'll be bringing you the live presentation of Telkom's interim results, so be sure to tune in for that.